That's fine, because hot women are not fun to be around. They are just tedious, and it's like, what do you like to do? What do you like to talk about? What kind of sense of humor do you have? And it's just like, boring. And you know what? And I don't want to pretend that I care because you're hot, so I'm done. I'm, you know?
Some handmade shoes made in London that are like $500.
Oh, wow, really? These are from personal experience?
I'd be interested, what is the mind of the hot chick? As I think about it, I have hung out with hot chicks.
And they do talk about what? I mean, it is tedious, right?
It is kind of tedious, but it's kind of fun to try and hear.
The novelty of it, maybe. It's
the novelty of trying.
But at a certain point, like you see, you do get old, and then you're just done with the novelty, and you're just like, this is just
tedious. That's just it. You get tired of it because it's what feels like a waste of time.
It is a waste of time.
And then you get bitter about it, which is
good. Which is never fun, but at the same time, yeah. It's the occasional time and the rarity when it's like it's a hot chick that's also kind of cute and does have a good sense of humor in it, and then you're like, then it really hurts. That's the time it really hurts. And you're like, oh, that's too bad. And there are about 5 of those in the entire planet.
Name one.
I don't know. I don't know of any.
Yeah, you might be talking about a griffin for all I know. The unicorn. Is that your unicorn?
It's my unicorn. I'll find it. Never keep it just for myself in a basement, chained up.
Oh, like what's his name? Like Nixon?
Nixon?
Right, Lord or King? Lord, what's his name from the last unicorn?
Oh yeah, you're right.
Unicorns.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Haggard.
Haggard.
King Haggard.
And locking up the unicorns.
Locking up the unicorns. Is that gonna be you? Enchantment plays its cards all right, hand in hand with the workings of the seasons. Legends can be now and forever, teaching us to love for goodness.
Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, it's Mark, it's Ian. Hi, I'm Ian. Hi, that's Mark. Mark's enjoying a smoke. And, we're going to talk...
Very, very bad for you.
Yeah, we don't endorse it. Don't try this at home, kids. Makes you do that, makes you sigh all the time. Tonight we're talking about from 1980, Steve McQueen's final film, The Hunter. We've been promising this one for like a year.
Oh, easily.
One of our first podcasts, other than Ice Pirates, when we more regularly started getting together to do them was Bullet. And at that point, we were like, well, we got to see some more of these McQueen movies. These are fun things.
We did Tom Horn.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
That's the only other.
Yeah. I'd like to do Towering Inferno or something maybe in the future sometime. Some random...
Great Escape would be good.
Happens to work out for both of us.
The Sand Pebbles would be good.
Yeah.
The Magnificent Seven.
That could be good.
That's another classic. So, a great one would be the original... The original Getaway.
That could be good. Yeah.
Sam Peckinpah.
Oh, I could get it.
What's his name's in it too? That Ben Johnson. The guy played the sheriff, he's in it. Plays a bad guy.
Cool.
Slim Pickens is in it.
Can't go wrong with Slim.
No, it was a good movie. It was a really heavy handed movie, in fact the remake with Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger.
Yeah.
Was a little bit softer. He plays a real hard ass in The Getaway.
Cool.
Stephen McQueen.
I'd be game. But this was his final one. And
that was the movie he stole Ally McGraw away from that big producer.
Oh.
Paramount. What's that guy's name? I got the movie about his life.
Oh, yeah. Not Paramount. No, what's his name?
The Kid Stays in the Picture is the name of the
documentary. Bob Evans.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the movie he stole... Stole that guy's wife away.
Those things will happen. Women love the bad boys. And he's pretty bad in this one. Bad at driving. Bad at pretty much everything. He's kind of bumbling in this whole movie, really.
He's not
50. Heroic. It's more realistic, maybe. He's just this kind of guy.
Yeah, he's not a superhero. But he's not... He's not...
He's not a pussy.
No, not really. But he's got that thing that I think is authentic to people that trade in that sort of world that are trying to be the good guys, is that he's respectful.
Right.
Because that seems to give you a lot of clout almost, you know? Like when he walks through the game that the kids are playing, like those punks or whatever playing, and in the stairwell at the Chicago thing when he's going to bust that guy at the end. And they're like, well, watch it, man. He's like, sorry. You know, instead of being like, hey, you know, screw off or whatever. He wasn't some false bravado tough guy. He was just sort of a guy, you know? This is a solid movie. I enjoy it. It's kind of sloppy. It's kind of all over the place in terms of, like, what's the real biggest issue going on here?
The biggest issue is him becoming a father, I think.
Yeah, it sort of is. But in terms of, like, it being, like, a genre picture, like, it pretty much is, which, you know, in terms of being, like, about, like, a bounty hunter going after guys and stuff.
Well,
it's kind of split into three or four different sections.
Like that.
Yeah, that's true. There's not very many bounty hunter movies like that. I mean, there's that one with De Niro and Grodin. And Grodin might come back for part two.
It is a different kind of movie.
The sequel.
They're doing a sequel?
Well, Grodin might return to acting for it. Can you believe Grodin back? I think his last was maybe Beethoven 17 or something like that, you know?
What are you talking about?
Charles Grodin. Charles Grodin is in Midnight Run, right?
Yes.
He might come back for the sequel.
Midnight Run 2. After some of the shit De Niro's been doing lately, who knows?
It wouldn't surprise anybody, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, some people just... Nah.
Well, they just gotta get paid. They gotta get Skrilla.
Yeah,
De Niro's a father now, too. You know, he's been a daddy for a while, so he probably went through the same situation as old Ralph in this movie. Ralph's our main character, the bounty hunter, and he's getting a little long in the tooth and getting a little tired of running around chasing guys, but he's got a nice little school teacher that he's knocked up, and he kind of has to figure out life.
Man, she is a honey.
It just seems like this is like three episodes of a TV show or something, almost, kind of connected, because at the beginning you have the LeVar Burton story a little bit that doesn't really go anywhere, but it's sort of how they choose to start the movie. And then he hunts that other guy down real quick. And that's kind of a fun little fight sequence and a neat set piece there where a bunch of stuff gets broken up.
It's called a putthead.
It's kind of funny. It's kind of slapsticky. And then you find out that Bob the Goon is trying to kill him, but isn't really all doing... He's not very thorough about it. Like, he could... If he wanted to kill it, he's trying to terrorize him, maybe.
Well, he's a meth head nut.
Meth head nut, and he's just got a lot of free time on his hands. And that's just a weird part. And then you find out that his police captain buddy has been dealing on the side, and
yeah, that's not
it's
good.
It's all. I mean, I guess it's based on a biography of this guy who was a real person, and so I get what they're doing in the movie, maybe trying to kind of stay real to the way things maybe happened, and maybe all that stuff happened at the same time, but it feels very kind of off and on. Tonally, it's difficult to figure out where it's at, and that kind of makes the more dramatic stuff seem a little more funny or ridiculous. I mean, the stuff with Bob the Goon is just... It doesn't even seem like it's appropriate in that movie. Like, it seems like it doesn't need that. Like, if it's just kind of a lighter movie about a bounty hunter doing his thing, kind of he goes, he hems and haws, and there's a little bit of action and a gunfight and stuff at the end that kind of has sort of a... I mean, there's a little bit of action there. But like you said, a lot of it is about him kind of just reconciling his love of old things with the fact that he's got to realize that he's got a wife that's, you know, not a wife, but he's got a girlfriend that's going to have a kid, and, you know, that's going to change everything for him.
Eli Wallach lays it out.
Eli Wallach lays it out good, yeah.
The ugly himself.
Yep. And, I mean, I don't know. It's just like there's components that are working in this movie that are there that are cool. But as a whole, it's kind of tough to judge. I mean, like you said, it's definitely its own unique kind of thing. But I don't know how that works as a viewing experience as a movie, because of the way it... You're kind of like trying to figure out, okay, what's this about? What's really going on here at the beginning? It's definitely not traditional narrative in terms of, like, there's a first act, a second act, and a third act.
Right.
At all, really. I mean, you assume that eventually they've been talking about this one guy that he's going to go after, and he doesn't want to, and he's reluctant, that eventually he'll go after him. So he kind of does. And it's all... I don't know. it's all kind of unremarkable. There's a little bit of character stuff here and there, but it's, I don't know, it's not the best put together movie. Peter Himes co-wrote the screenplay. Peter Himes, who did Running Scared, which we did on the podcast
a while ago.
And he did Outland in 2010 and stuff. So this was sort of...
Outland, was that the one with Sean Connery?
That was the one with Sean Connery and Peter Boyle. Yeah, I don't know. It's... I think part of it is in my head, I thought, like... this would be, like, I thought of Bullet. You thought
it needed Charles Grodin.
No, I thought of Bullet, and then I thought of, like, well, Bullet, if Bullet's a bounty hunter. But you know what? It was 20 years later, you know? It wasn't 20 years later, but it was
12 years later.
It was 12 years later, and things had changed and for everybody in the world and at large, and the difference between 68 and 80 is pretty extreme, so...
Yeah, things changed a lot.
So, I mean, we talked about this when we talked about when we did the Callahan movies, sort of the difference between those first three and the later two and stuff. Just
yeah, between 68 and 80, things changed a lot. Do you really feel like things have changed that much from 98 to today?
98? You mean? Oh, yeah, the 12-year period?
I'm just waiting for the hover cars.
Yeah, the hover cars. You know, yes and no. I mean...
You know, they were old Zemeckis was on it with that one, though, with Jaws 3D.
3D, yeah. Zemeckis is making it happen with his with his motion capture garbage, you know? I mean, I think this is just one of those cases where I really wanted it to be a certain kind of movie, and it wasn't what I wanted it to be, and so I'm a little disappointed. But that doesn't mean it's a bad movie. I'm disappointed
with a lot of directors, yeah. To be perfectly honest.
Well, I'm not talking about Zemeckis. I don't care about Zemeckis. I'm talking about the Hunter here. But not to be confused with Hunter, the TV show, that probably started only a few years after this movie.
There was a TV show called
Richard
Hunter.
Dreyer. Or Fred Dreyer?
Fred Dreyer.
Mm-hmm. Hunter. You don't remember Hunter, the TV... He had a female partner?
No.
It was a cop show. Like on CBS or NBC or something.
I was in the 2 80s. Years old.
Yeah, you're older than me. You don't remember Hunter.
I'm like a month older than you.
Yeah, exactly. That month is a major month. That means you're born in the 80s. You're born
That's
in 80s.
You're
born in
81. You missed Carter.
Yeah, I actually got in on the last 2 hours of Carter.
Oh, there you go.
Or how I don't know how that technically works. I guess once you have to be sworn in.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's a funny story about how I almost, dad almost won that bet. Crazy. Anyway, Hunter, I give Hunter 2.5.
2.5 out of 5.
It's just, he wasn't quite in his element. Things just, it didn't quite come together. I'm sorry to say. I can see what it is on there. And there's so many, like, quirky, interesting things going on that are just kind of left unsaid or that aren't explored enough for me. Like any one of these movies that were hinted at in this movie would have been a great movie, I think, and entertaining. Even if it had just been real light and more to do with, like, the guys hanging out of his house playing cards and who knows what, that would have been cool, too. But they didn't really do much with that. They didn't really do much with the captain that was on the take. It was almost just, like, snippets of this guy's biography kind of put together into one thing. And then, I mean, when he goes to get those guys in the cornfield, like, it's almost like cut to his life with his wife, with his girlfriend and stuff, and then cut to, it's like it's trying to juxtapose. Look, he flies off and something zany happens and he almost gets killed, or he deals with some crazy guys and he comes back and he's got a bunch of people playing cards in his apartment and or in his house, and you know, his girlfriend's pregnant, and she wants to, you know, find out how serious he takes everything, and, I don't know, like I said, it just didn't quite work. I mean, you could see the boom shadow in that one shot. Some people were phoning it in, that's all I'm saying. I'm kidding about the boom shadow, that shit's in every movie. There's, like, if you look at, like, on IMDb, under the goofs for Heat, like, you can see, like, the water glass is, like, half full in that shot, and then there's continuity, like, in that famous, like, coffee shop scene. Which to me seems ridiculous. You'd think that on that, at least that one thing, you would get it 100% right. But who knows?
I didn't notice that.
I wouldn't notice it either. I'd notice it now because I've been an editor on stuff. So now I notice all of that stuff. Not like all the time, not like top notch, but I can be aware of it. I can turn my sensitivity off to a degree, and it all depends on how enthralling the movie is. It's one of those, well, if they're paying attention to that, then, you know, then they're not really into the movie. So it's like, get them into the movie, and then you can have all kinds of minor continuity errors, and it's, you know, no one's going to notice. Like, no one's looking at the glass when somebody's delivering a line, you know? Or something's blowing up or something, who knows? Anyway, yeah, 2.5 for me. What are you going to give it?
I'm going to give it a 3.
3, again, okay. Similar to our review for Airy Brown, which...
Airy Brown.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, the Bounty Hunter theme is just so great. It's something that I really wish they would do more with. I mean, to me...
So when's there going to be Dog the Movie?
Dog the Movie. Well, there's going to be Cowboy Bebop the Movie. I don't know, I just think that...
Again?
No. Yeah, they're going to do live action. Who knows, it might not be bad. It's going to be Keanu Reeves putting it together. Yeah, I know, right? Roll your eyes, get over it, and then realize that all the guys that did the show, all the Japanese guys that did the show, have to, like, basically give it the okay. Now, they may do that to a piece of crap for a giant cash. I don't doubt it. But I feel like with this one show and this one thing, there's enough preciousness behind it, both in the U.S. and there in Japan, and behind the guys that made it, that I feel like they would maybe... That, I'm not going to be cynical about that. I'm just not going to be cynical about it. But the idea in that show is so great. The idea of... But yeah, I mean, the Bounty Hunter thing is so great because it really lets them... They even talk about it in this movie a little, like, you know, kind of lets you kind of do whatever you need to get the guy. And so in something like Cowboy Bebop, it's awesome. It's more interesting than Detective a little bit because the Detective is so ingrained in a certain world that it's... I don't know, almost derivative. And if it's a cop, then it's like they have the rules and all the other stuff and the bureaucracy.
No rules. Doesn't Cobra lay that out if the criminals...
Yeah, because what rules did... Yeah, exactly. What were the rights of that girl?
We gotta keep playing and we're gonna lose.
Uh-huh.
Keep playing by the rules.
We're gonna lose. Yeah. Ah, Cobra.
Cobra.
Mary.
Man, I haven't had that on TV. You need the whole Cobretti series.
That's right. Cobretti 1, which is just Cobra, and Cobretti 2, which is Demolition Man. Cobretti 3, which is Judge Dredd.
I'd watch Cobretti 2, man.
Cobretti 2? I saw part of it, with, like, on TV.
Well, what do you think about poor Sandra? Isn't that a shame?
She
got the Oscar, though.
That was going to happen eventually anyway, probably. She just got to learn a lesson. These women got to learn a lesson with their bad boys, you know? They got
to
learn
a lesson. He seemed like a dipshit to me.
Kind of, but, you know, you never know.
No, you do.
Yeah, you pretty much do. But, you know, women get what they want. They want the bad boy, then they're going to get the bad boy. They're going to get the whole package deal. Exactly. Again. Second. You in a third there?
That's coming.
Okay. There we go.
That's entertainment.
That's the part of the podcast where we burp Mark. And we put him to bed to make sure that he doesn't get cranky.
You don't want that.
No, you definitely don't want that crankiness.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could go into the whole career Stephen Queen could talk about. And, you know, I was mentioning God Bless You or the last lines he had on film. And he was 50 years old, and he died not long before we were born, in 1980,
mm-hmm.
Of lung cancer. And yeah, it's kind of a shame. I would have liked to have seen him do some more stuff.
He could have hammered out a handful of good things. He'd probably still be alive. He's,
again, another actor that I enjoy watching. And his performances are not always the same, either.
No.
I notice he definitely can tell. I mean, he's always Steve McQueen, but he definitely mellowed as he got older.
Yeah.
And he went through a lot of strange phases in his life, too. He did a whole drugged out counterculture kind of phase, and he got fat, and he grew his big ass beard, and he just kind of tuned out the world for a while. There's this big gap, and I think The Getaway is when he kind of pulled his ass back together.
Weird.
Yeah, there was this whole period kind of between Towering Inferno and The Getaway, which I think was about 3 or 4 years, where he just didn't do anything.
Weird. Did he, like, have a personal trauma? Or?
Well, I think he got divorced. Man, his first wife was... Jesus, she was just amazing.
And I'll be
this
all...
This little Broadway pixie girl. I mean, reminded me a lot of Audrey Hepburn. And, she finally got tired of his shit. I guess he was a little moody, a little difficult.
You can kind
of tell. He had a lot of mom issues.
Oh, weird.
Well, his dad, he was, he grew up in, like, not father, he grew up in, like, you know, schools for runaway boys and stuff like that, you know, back in the 30s and 40s and stuff like that. His mother died when he was pretty young. Yeah, I don't think he ever knew his father. And he ended up joining the army. And I think he got his ass in a little bit of trouble there. But I think he didn't get... I don't think he got dishonorably discharged. But yeah, definitely somebody who came from nothing. But I was kind of thinking, you know, the difference between that and, say, like Clint Eastwood. And it's funny, I was thinking about it since his real start came with the TV show Wanted Dead or Alive. And Clint Eastwood's start really came with
Rawhide.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Clint Eastwood's still ticking.
Yeah, I mean, they were, would you say they were sort of contemporaries? Or?
Well, they were born at the same time. I would say... Well, by far, Stephen Queen was a much bigger star. Clint Eastwood didn't really become a star until Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
He had done the spaghetti westerns. And that's about it. I think he had...
it's all about Callahan, huh?
Well, Callahan made him a star.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that.
But you think about it, he was...
Did McQueen ever direct anything?
He was already 40 years old.
Yeah.
41 years old. Steve McQueen really became a star in The Hustler. And then Magnificent Seven wasn't that long.
He's in The Hustler? The Paul Newman pool movie?
Oh, what am I thinking of? I'm thinking of, I guess I was thinking The Cincinnati Kid, which is a poker movie.
Yeah.
But, I'm tired.
I hear that. No, but did McQueen ever expand? I mean, Bullet was the production company.
He had his own production company.
And it went under for Le Mans after Bullet, and it was just too expensive and no one cared, and so it goes. And
right, it was a labor of love.
Yeah.
But it was a movie that was pretty much about racing.
Yeah.
So, you know, he really narrowed his audience, but he didn't give a shit.
But that's a problem. Problem when you got too much.
But it's a classic to anybody who enjoys racing.
Yeah, it's well, but like at the time he wasn't gonna. It wasn't a cost effective move, probably.
No, it wasn't.
And being moody, Steve McQueen, he was probably just gonna do it anyway. And but hell with you. And then things didn't go so well for him. Then he got fat and became a hippie, huh?
I don't know if he became a hippie so much. Well, yeah, probably a little bit. He was really into the hip lingo, apparently.
Huh.
What director was it that was talking about it? It was a director he worked with. Who directed... Was it...
A guy named Buzz directed this movie, which seems weird.
No, it wasn't Buzz. It was... I just remember watching an interview of this director... talking about Stephen Queen and dealing with him. And I think he was talking a lot about his stare. I mean, he could, like... Apparently he had real intense eyes.
Oh, you can see.
I was thinking about that, too. He, him and Paul Newman with the bright, bright blue eyes.
I'm gonna get you.
Back before Contacts, yeah. And then, of course, he was... We definitely probably never get a chance, but, you know, he was nominated for Best Actor for The Sand Pebbles. And, you know, I hear that... I heard that referenced one time, and it kind of cracked me up a little bit.
Hmm.
What was it? Maybe it was... I was listening to a commentary, and this director... was just talking about it, you know, just being the wrong year.
Yeah.
You have your performance of a lifetime, and it's just the wrong year.
It happens.
But, no, I just enjoyed The Hunter, especially when I was younger, of course. It was a movie that I really enjoyed when I was a kid. And And I still enjoy it. Like I said, it's been years since I had seen it. I bought it on DVD, and I hadn't watched it yet. But no, it's still a fun movie.
Definitely. What's that? That's The Hunter. Somebody just at some party when my mom was pregnant with me was like, "Hey, Strope, when's the due date?" And Lane, you know, this would have been probably back in August or who knows when, you know? And he's like, "He's going to be born the day Reagan is sworn in, so before the election and everything else." The guy's like, "I tell you what, if that happens, I'll pay for it." And I was born 2 hours before the day Reagan was sworn in. I was born at 10:18 p.m. January 19th, 1981. And if I'd been born at 12:01, technically it would have been the day.
And the disappointment starts.
I know, and the failure and the disappointment. I think my father still really resents me a lot for that probably. He's like, you know, you could have saved us like 10 grand. You know what we could have done with that? If we'd invested that 10 grand back in 1981.
We would have lost it all a couple years ago.
Ah, you invested smart.
Invested smart.
In something long term. I don't even want to think about that right now. Oh, my God. That's the first time.
You invested it in Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Heck, yeah. The double down. Invested it in the double down. You know, the two chicken breasts instead of bread.